So it is for those who store up treasures for themselves, but are not rich toward God. Please be seated. Gandalf does not use the word fool lightly. When he takes the brunt of an attack by the dreaded Balrog so that his companions can escape, he screams, and I know a lot of you know this, "Fly, you fools!" When a curious hobbit grabs the hold of an orb that happens to be a portal to evil incarnate, Gandalf calls out his family name when he cries, "Fool of a Took!" Kind of like when your mother used your full name when you were in a lot of trouble. When I heard Bernard James Owens IV, I A, knew I was in a lot of trouble, and B, said, well, that's really a bit much, isn't it? I'm not talking about the Gospel of Luke, but rather the Lord of the Rings. Gandalf, the wizard, wasn't angry at an everyday disobedience. He used that word fool because there was a profound urgency, a mortal danger. And if the folks didn't run, or at the very least get their act together very quickly, then they were all going to perish together. Fly, you fool. Run from this danger. Don't stop to bicker or prioritize. Get out as fast as you can, and you just might live. Jesus tells a parable where God confronts a man who is wealthy and let's be honest, prudent, and even a little bit wise, perhaps, and calls him a fool. It's the same tone and urgency that the wizard directs at elves and hobbits. This is the moment. This is the moment of decision. And you, my friend, are in a great deal of trouble. Now, in the realm of parables and teachings from Jesus, all of this starts in the usual way. Someone in the crowd raises their hand and asks for a little bit of conventional wisdom. Jesus, tell my brother to divide the family inheritance with me, right? You tell him. Now, there are two ways to read this. One is that he saw Jesus maybe as a tribal chief or even a paragon of holiness and fairness who might have just had enough sway to help him get his cut. Or maybe he was looking for something more radical. Seeking a more disruptive justice. Perhaps the other brother was an older brother and therefore got all of the inheritance, which was customary at the time. So this may not have just been about justice, but about equity as well. To this call for fairness or even disruptive justice, Jesus kind of surprises us by saying, nope, not getting involved in that one. Be on your guard, he says instead, against all kinds of greed. For one's life does not consist of the abundance of possessions. We might put all of this together and say, fairness is good, justice and equity are better, but the highest value is living a life where our need for things isn't what drives us at all. Greed threatens the foundations of everything that is good in the world. Greed is subtle and seductive. It comes in every shape and size, and it wears amazing camouflage. There's jealousy and keeping up with the Joneses. There's anxiety about never having enough that leads to always wanting more. And then there's plain old avarice, which used to be impolite, but now seems to be an evidence of virility and even in a spectacular heresy, a sign of God's favor. Watch out, Jesus says. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Greed is a dragon that doesn't care if we're liberal or conservative. It doesn't care what religion we are. It doesn't care how educated or skilled we are. It wants to paint us into this corner where we believe that we have been given the short end of the stick and that we need and deserve a little bit more. And sometimes we do need more. Sometimes we really don't have enough. Sometimes our neighbor really does not have enough. But we must always be on our guard because greed can use it all. Our overabundance, our fear, our anxiety, even our not enoughness to warp our hearts and turn us inward, away from the good and beautiful world that God has created for the dignity and enjoyment of all. In the parable of the barns, the man Jesus describes is actually, when we think about it, a prudent and intelligent man. The barns he already has, his fields are producing abundantly. And he looks out and he looks at his barns. They're too small. They're a little bit shabby. They're last year's paint color. And he says, look, this has to go. I'm going to take these down and I'm going to build brand new ones. It's a capital investment that gives him a little bit of peace and security. And who among us in the same situation with the same resources might not have done the exact same thing? And before we besmirch those barns, let's appreciate them for a moment. Barns are agriculture, the civilization. They're what allow a community to survive and grow and subsidize the lean years with the fat ones. Barns are savings and wealth. They're what allow us to build roads and cathedrals and have season tickets at the symphony. Barns are a sign of human ingenuity that allows wealth to grow. But the question becomes, where on the spectrum of individual wealth and community prosperity are we? As individuals, as a culture, what is driving us? What is shaping our values? And in raising up these brand new barns and then sitting back and saying, self, we did great, in creating a life of comfort and ease, this man has given his heart to the things of this world and completely forgotten about the abundance of spirit. You fool, God says. You have placed your whole life in the hands of something fleeting and seductive, and this night it all comes due. So it is with those who store up the goodies but are not rich towards God. But you know, it's deeper than that. Everything in the barn is his, right? I worked for that. My own two hands, right? All that. But it isn't really his. Everything we have is a gift from God. Not 1%, not 10%, not the figure that comes from a sliding scale based on how good we're doing this month, but all of it, all of it. Which means all of that is meant for the good of all of God's people, all of God's creatures. It is all from God, and we are stewards of it. The man has traded spiritual treasures for worldly ones. He has hoarded his abundance, keeping it for his own safety while others go hungry. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Now, I haven't been here for 3 months, but I've been watching the same news that you all have. This summer, our government has chosen to mock those who go hungry by building out an infrastructure of greed and calling it beautiful. I won't name it. I'll call it Let's Build Beautiful Barns. Remember, barns aren't bad. We need them or we're all going to go hungry. But we have now chosen to build barns that place the fruit of God's abundance out of the reach of the most needy, casting millions off of health care, drying up food subsidies. Why? So that we can preserve wealthy tax cuts. And if that wasn't bad enough, we will be impoverishing our nation for decades, because unlike proper barns, which requires geometry that, you know, lines up, the deficit math doesn't work and doesn't come close to working. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Be on your guard against anything that enriches you while impoverishing your neighbor. When someone in the crowd asked Jesus for fairness or perhaps justice, he surprises us. These are worthy things, he says, working for a world that is fair and just and good. This is necessary work. Yet Jesus calls us to a deeper awareness of abundance, where the greatest treasure is our relationship with God, where prosperity means the well-being of our neighbor rather than a full vault that we have the only keys to, where love, not things, is what really matters, where greed and the movements that it powers hold no sway over us, where barns filled with the fruit of God's creation are seen not as the silos of a fortunate few, but rather these are gifts. These are the very means by which we steward the generosity and the abundance of God, where we become channels of grace and abundance. This is the gift. This is the greatest treasure. The greatest treasure is the life of the Spirit. When we are rich, not in things, but in compassion and generosity and love.